And welcome to the Rock and Roll Survivors Podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. So let's get started. So Patty Quatro, the Pleasure Seekers, continue to be on this magical summer-long Pacific Northwest tour. It's 1968, and you're opening for Eric Burdon and the Animals, while concert promoter Pat O'Day is also booking you all over as a headlining act. Other TV shows that, to use your term, are in the rock ether, but it wasn't just that one that we talked about. So there were more. There was continuous press writing about you all the time, and your newly launched official Pleasure Seekers, I can't say it, I'm so excited, Together fan club, they put out these page-long bios on the five members. And we read from yours and Pammy Benford's because we were talking about your guitar playing and the style and what you both brought as guitarists. But I also, we ended the episode, and I think this is really key for the band now, because we have more social, political, economic, women's movement landscape shifts that are continuing to go on culturally. And this is a really big deal as you're coming of age. And so the other thing that's shifting during this time is, of course, music. And you used the word in the last episode as we were ending And I really want you to put this into context for us, Patty, because you use the word that the music was getting heavier. And I think that is so key, for a bad pun, to talk about this shift, because the pleasure seekers would have a, be impacted by the shift, and you would embrace this shift wholeheartedly. And we did open up this episode with Steppenwolf's Born to Be Wild for a very intentional reason, because I want you to set the stage for us for what this song meant, what it meant for the pleasure seekers, and to talk about these shifts that were happening for you.
It was true that the musicians were catching on to the word heavy. It became the lingo of music because it was moving in that direction. And as I remember it, Steppenwolf was the first rock band in lyrics to say heavy metal thunder. So here we go. We have the word metal and thunder. I mean, it's all this whole connotation, and it's helped start a culture shift going on in lyrics. I loved Steppenwolf. It was a great song, and we played it. And this cultural shift started planting a seed in our heads to fucking hell make necessary moves in writing original tunes in a heavier vein that we preferred anyway from the get-go. But now it really escalated.
It's interesting that you say the twist in the words, because I even noticed with some of the earlier language describing you, the band, they use the word funky or funkier. And now the word is shifting to heavier, a heavier sound. So I love that. Well, another aspect of this seismic cultural shift was the women's movement and the women's rights that were happening and the feminist movement that was burgeoning. And you weren't necessarily going out there to be emblematic of feminists. But your stage costumes were very representative of these far-reaching stages in the sense of what you were trying to convey. I mean, first of all, let's just talk about what's going on with the women's movement in terms of the pleasure seekers. First of all, it's obvious because you're an all-female rock and roll band. You're already pushing the envelope. And you started off with your costumes. You were edgy. You, as you jokingly said, you weren't going to wear granny dresses. You wanted to be provocative, but you didn't want to be kind of a TNA band, if you will. You weren't selling sex. You were owning your sex, if you will. And of course, your costumes, we've mentioned her before, but it bears repeating, were designed by Darlene Arnone's grandmother and costumer, Lily Weaver. And so the costumes that you created, and I believe you were a part of this creation now as well, in this burgeoning time for women, you had a specific costume for these stage appearances, and they are raunchy, edgy, hot. So tell us about them, Patty.
I knew you would get to this as soon as you saw the pictures. This
Could
new
I
co
not?
oh, you, I know. This new costume made us laugh in how we gave the suits, ABC and Mercury, a giant middle finger on their subtle hints of us being, trying to make us more of a TNA band. Lily designed a jumpsuit costume with a graphic overlay cutout of boobs and pelvis spotlighted, which was very tongue-in-cheek of how we felt. Seriously, what woman would take the stage in such a sexually graphic outfit? We had raised eyebrows, gasps, controversy ensued. Nobody banned us because we were totally covered, It was our way of telling the suits, you want TNA? Well, this is all you're gonna get. And then we were also, you got to remember, coming of age as independent women with now our own ideas and evolving image. No longer naive. Lily was still in the mix on costuming. However, we were now with this heavier shift being drawn to more trendy clothes that were becoming available in avant-garde stores. So, man, we are transitioning in every way.
Well, I have a question for you. We had talked pre in previous episodes about Leo Fenn's vision for you and making sure that there was this real safe environment for you. You were not going to go off and party or any of that, but you are in this incredible time. You are coming into your own as women. Did he have an issue with these shifting costumes, this racy kind of costume?
No, I think Leo was growing up too. He was beginning to understand showbiz and how it worked. He loosened up a bit. I mean, we were growing up. He was a little older, and yeah, he loosened up. He was fine. He
I
was
love
so.
that. And I have to say, the idea of you giving the male suits the big metaphorical giant middle finger.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
Oh,
yeah.
that is just so hot. I'm sorry. I think that is fantastic. And
Yeah.
again, so clever because the opposite, and we've said this about other things before, could have ensued. You, as a new band wanting to be famous, you could have succumbed to the request. And you use the word subtle. I don't think they were very subtle that they wanted you to go out there. If they're asking you to be topless, I'm not sure if that's subtle. But
Well,
I
they didn't ask us. They didn't ask us, but it was always that undercurrent thing, you know. And as I said in a previous episode, they did hire a topless girl band to play in Vegas. You know, I was just, oh, go ahead, guys, you know, do what you're gonna do.
Well, this is great. And again, we have these pictures to share with the listeners. And now everybody knows the behind the scenes story of it, which I just love. And I also love how in these pictures that each of you is wearing a different colored version of it. I mean, the cutout parts are always black, which I also thought was wonderful because your official fan club members always talked about your favorite colors in the bios, which I thought, I don't know, somehow it all tied in here.
Oh my God.
Well, as mentioned, we started to read from your fan club's bios. We started with yours, and then we talked about Pammy's, as I mentioned. And so on this episode, I want to start with Darlene's, and then I want to get to Susie's, and then I want to get to Arlene's, because there's a couple of things that are very striking to me in the three bios. But I also want you to talk about Dar's, because I want you to clarify the way she is being received by your fans, because this bio is so over the top incredible. All of yours were, but this one is just so wonderful. And I want to read it, but I also want your take on it when we're done. So it reads, quote, Darlene Dar Thumper. Her talent on the drums is the beginning and ending of every description of her. She is a show in herself and ranks as the heaviest drummers in the nation. Dar makes any male drummer hesitant to try and match her on drums. After all her 11 drums are set up, she becomes the 12th, attacking them with such a wild force that people gape in wonder at this shy young girl. She drives her drums with such an intense sound that it goes beyond words. Dar has one of the funkiest and imaginative sounds on the music scene today, combined with a phenomenal speed that few drummers can equal. Her 3 years training created such a talent that Slingerland Drums Company sponsored her on Hearsay. Her voice, compared to that of Grace Slick, has a unique, vibrant quality with a strength that fills any room. Blonde-haired, brown-eyed doll with such sad eyes that she wins your heart over with them and then tricks you by smiling. Dar is the type that is always around when you need her, with her bubbling, pleasant personality and easygoing nature. She can put anyone at ease. Dar is the actress of the group and knows how to get what she wants using her feminine wiles. Another Detroiter, she started out at a young age playing guitar, then switching to drums when she got one from her uncle as a gift. Her favorite artists are Canned Heat, Ginger Baker of Cream, Barbra Streisand, and Dionne Warwick. She likes watching marching bands because she was once in one while in school, listening to drum solos and playing the guitar. Loves all sports, chicken pot pies, and drawing in her spare time. Her pet peeves: phony people, people who jump the gun or make up their mind without hearing both sides, and her drums not being set up right. Then they quote her, the club members, unbelievable, fantastic, undeniable, one of the heaviest drummers on the rock scene today, a true talent in every sense of the word, phenomenal, sensational. In these few words, this is Dar. Close quote.
God, the fans were so infatuated and shocked by the idea of a female drummer as good as she was. It just wasn't out there yet. And this bio pretty much wrote itself with ease, I think. And let me clarify, there was a lot of attention on all of us, but a female drummer playing, you know, on drums was just something unusual at that time because no one was doing it, and a double bass drum to boot. So she did garner a lot of attention in that way. And then, I mean, then we started getting the fan letters from these resumes, these bios. I felt like I was like you were reading from a teeny bop magazine because that's how they come off. It's so funny. I'll read a couple of them as we go through. This one says, Darlene, I love your sound and need your love. The lonely, long nights drift by, and still my soul cries out for your tender touch. This one was from these guys in a fraternity in Pennsylvania, of all places. We were getting them from all over. And this was, I mean, they were always full of love and all that, or trying to hook up, or just complimenting us. We had all types.
Well, I had said this on the previous episode that the fan who wrote to you was, I use the word adorable, which was not only condescending, but I want to take it back and say, I don't know, a 6-page handwritten letter with his profession of love to you is a little obsessive. And you will read more as of you just read Dar's. And you got this all the time. These male fans were talking about their love and you're wanting your touch. And
Oh,
it's a little creepy. I don't know. Maybe that's me looking at it from today's standpoint, but
they were young college guys, you know, that they just wanted to write us and be involved. It was hilarious.
well,
And we
it is.
appreciated the, you know, the thoughts and stuff as far as them taking time to write us. I mean, that was sweet. You know, they were supporting our band and more.
And more. Well, and speaking of more, your sister Susie got tons of fans, fan letters from her fans, but those always turned into almost songs or, again, professions of love. But there is another aspect. It's not just to be a teeny bopper behind the scenes reading all of these, because there is something that I do want to pick up when we're done reading these. And it is about the next steps for the pleasure seekers. But let's read your sister Susie's quote, Susie's soul. 5-foot ball of fire with a personality to match, dark-haired, green-eyed doll with a wide-eyed, innocent look that portrays that little girl image so becoming to her. It is hard to believe that such a small, young girl could put forth such a heavy performance as she does. Susie feels that, quote, music is a universal language. And about her audience, she says, quote, without them, I'm like a clock unwound. Close quote. She is the lead singer of the group who has a dynamic voice that just won't quit. Her deep soul sound makes her one of the top female vocalists in the country today. Susie is the ultra hip, witty comedian who comes across with a stage presence all her own. She is a self-taught bassist with a style and speed you have to see to believe. She has an imaginative way of finding notes on the bass you never knew were there. Susie is one of the choreographers of the group, as well as one of its prime songwriters. She dances with a vitality and originality beyond imagination, which proves how important she feels dancing can and should be in a group. Susie is an enormous talent in all fields of music who proves herself beyond words on stage. She puts on a dynamic show that leaves nothing to be desired. She hails from Detroit, Michigan, where she grew up in a musical environment, which explains her great love of all types of music. She also plays drums and piano. She has a nutty, weird personality, which makes her the practical jokester of the group. She likes Otis Redding and Tony Bruno and digs jazz and soul music. Susie loves to listen to albums in her spare time, shop for clothes and shoes. She bakes great cakes and pastries, but hates to eat them. She loves to play piano if one is available. Her favorite colors are red and black, and she loves stuffed animals. Her pet peeves, small dressing rooms, phonies and performers who forget the little people who knew them when they were. In summing up, Susie is in every sense of the word showman. As one newspaper put it so well, quote, the lead singer of the Pleasure Seekers is named Susie Soul, no doubt. Exclamation point. Close quote.
Oh my
Well,
God.
I want you to take over here, but we've clarified this before, but and you and I, Patty, have talked about this a lot, this kind of cut and paste culture, especially on social media. Let's just clarify the record again, and I think this is probably where the mistake started. Susie is 5'2". She is not 5 feet tall, and let's please give her 2 inches. But I also really wanted to talk about not only the fan attention she was getting, read us some of the letters. So let's just start with her response. And what did you think about this bio?
Well, first of all, believe me, Susie would be the first one to correct inaccuracies on her height. She demands those 2 inches. And to clarify, Dar got attention in public, like at malls when she was recognized, they would, you know, go around her and stuff. We had to be taken out of a mall at one point. And Susie got more love letters and that kind of attention. Here's an example of one of Susie's fan letters. Susie, you're now my favorite girlfriend, Susie Soul. And after I see you, girl, I lose control. And even now, I don't have to take a poll. You're now my favorite girlfriend, Susie Soul. It's plain to see I like you enough to call you over so you'd come up. because I know we don't see each other enough so we can talk it over. Oh, and he goes on, it's an entire page song. At one part, it's Susie, 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 over and over. It's hilarious.
I do really want to pick up on this idea in the bio that Susie talks about as being a prime songwriter, because at that this point you're still doing covers. But let's put that aside for a second, because we've now read from three of the bios, or no, four of the bios. And that's right, because we only have Arlene left. And all of you are coming of age at this point. This is no longer teenagers. You're no longer trying to stay innocent here. I mean, this is a huge time, again, culturally. And so I would like you to talk about, I mean, you're getting these letters from these male fans, but were you experimenting with dating? Who were you dating? Did you ever date fans? What was happening behind the scenes?
Well, it's interesting because obviously we were still, I mean, I would have been 20, or Susie would have been 18, 17, something like that. I mean, so we're just that upper edge of, we're starting to grow up. I mean, it's not like 14 and 16 anymore, Aside from Arlene, we were all single, ready to mingle, not so naive anymore in this rock world that we were inhabiting. But still, we weren't going wild in our developing sexuality, not at all. We were definitely dating when we could, but it was difficult to carry on any romance when you're always touring. I was dating John Tuttle from Fevertree, a great guy, great band, and they were on a lot of the bills with us up in the Northwest. To be frank, there was a lot in the pot for Susie in these months. Often on the road, bands are in close proximity with music people, and at a time, a romance can happen that may be inappropriate or unexpected. This happened with Susie and a Mercury A&R man who had seen us at Trudy's and was a married man 9 years older, which I might say would have been taboo in that era. Okay, it started when we were playing Jilly's in Miami a few months back, and they both had fallen hard with a chemistry that was off the charts. Now, we all saw it, we knew it was happening, yet it was not openly discussed much. Susie and I did not discuss it, as she was very close and tended to confide in Arlene, her older sister. I worried how it would affect Susie, us sisters, the band. Her embarrassment as to her Catholic upbringing, all of it was in the pot. I remember going on a long walk alone, trying to deal with my own angst about this affair, which did end later. But was it going to fuck up the band? Fuck up her life. And also trying to think about balancing out my own dating life as well as my band leader priorities. I mean, think about it. We were existing nonstop 24/7 in a touring rock world, and all that we know what that entailed. We're older, no longer naive or innocent, living our lives, warts and all, both in our burgeoning sexuality and other normal adult growth. This wasn't young adults in college, but rather a uniquely different and more worldly life education while on the road daily. And oh, Kristen, my God, we were living in a spotlight. The fans, the press, musicians hitting on us. Much attention came, new and daunting to us. The bright spot was always, till this time, the band. That was which always centered us back, okay? But indeed, we did have to navigate our personal versions of rough spots as to romance and other things, as we tried to keep evolving with our young lives in a rock world. Not easy at all.
Not easy at all, and also is really leads to not having any kind of long-term relationships. How would it? Although it's interesting because I don't believe, tell me if I'm wrong, Pammy Benford was not seeing anybody at this time, serious. But Darlene was seeing, and we talked about this before, she was dating Gil Kiper, who was your roadie, and he was former roadie for The Who when they were in the US, and then he joins you. And that's a very, I don't mean to say convenient, but it's a very convenient relationship because they get to go on the road together. You
Yeah.
were dating Jeff Tuttle, and it was convenient because you were playing bills, but that was when you were in the Pacific Northwest, and then you have to go
Yes.
back to Detroit. And then you have Susie dating, and her first real love is a married man. And it's
Yeah.
hard enough as a young woman coming of age to fall in love, let alone to have this kind of weight on her.
Oh,
This,
yeah.
and I just love the way you worded everything. I thought it was exactly right on, and I'm glad we talked about this because it's important. And so
Yeah.
let's now move on to the last bio, your foxy lady sister, Arlene. And this one made me laugh so hard, Patty. As much as, do you remember when we read from my son the interview when you were in Miami, of course, and that was all but fawning over her and fainting and talking about her beauty and all of that. And so, just to clarify, these bios again were written by the official fan club of the Pleasure Seekers.
Yes.
And you and I are presuming, or maybe we shouldn't, that it was largely written by Kathy Perry because she was the club secretary and she was in touch with you. But you also had a male president named Matthew, and we don't know his last name. And this was in
Marvin.
Marvin, thank you,
Marvin.
Marvin, in Seattle. But I'm going to take a wild guess, and I'm being sarcastic here, that I think Marvin had a hand in Arlene's bio just because of the way it reads. So let's just start. Quote, Arlene, foxy lady, sex symbol of the group. She's an exciting, vivacious person with the classical beauty of a Grecian goddess, with long blonde hair, blue eyes so big you could lose yourself in them. The word femininity was created especially for her. Her figure is the type every girl dreams of having. Arlene wows people wherever she goes, being so poised and graceful on stage that you can't believe how nutty and fun she can be off stage. Her driving soul sound would make any organist in the country sit up and take notice. Arlene's 5 years of classical training stem from one of Detroit's finest classical pianists. Musical knowledge of her instrument is evident the moment she places her fingers on the keys. It's amazing how she can move with such excitement and still play an expert organ on the beat, off the beat, or in between with a heavy sound you must witness to believe. Her body is like a beautiful chord in and of itself, moving in rhythm with each note she plays on the organ. The moment Arlene steps on stage, it is obvious beyond doubt that she is the other choreographer of the group, as well as being one of the songwriters. Coming from Detroit, Michigan, she grew up involved in music much of her life, which explains why she enjoys watching any good performer who does his own thing and does it well. Arlene feels that, quote, music is my language. I love to do my thing and share it with my audience, close quote. She digs the Rascals, Tony Bruno, Aretha Franklin, and her favorite actors are, wait for it, Paul Newman and Warren Beatty. She loves dancing, swimming, and horseback riding, and is a health nut. Her favorite colors are purple and black, and her favorite song is To Love Somebody. Her pet peeves include people who pretend to be something they aren't and being rushed. In closing, seeing her, and you're left with the beautiful truth that she is one of the most fascinating entertainers of today. Close quote. So, oh, Patty, please add anything you want to this. But I am curious again about this idea. So now they're saying Susie was a prime songwriter. They mentioned you composed, but I didn't know if that meant arranged. And now they're saying Arlene is one of the prime songwriters. But at this point, you have only done covers by staff writers or covers. So can you talk about any and all of this so that we're not just laughing at this teeny bopper statement? Because they're saying you're writing songs. Were you?
Okay, first I'll start with Marvin. This was his time in the spotlight. Of course, he helped write that stuff. He wasn't going to leave it all to Kathy. And there's so much male-oriented language, you know. He loved that. I mean, Kathy eventually took over, but he had fun being the one, the president. So, and they took a lot of time and they interviewed us, each one of us individually. That's why they're so spotlighted as individuals. They handled, you know, they didn't lump us together. They wanted something on each girl, which they did very well. It was pretty darn good. It was like fan magazine stuff. So, first on the choreography, Susie and Arlene were good at the frontline moves. Susie often liked to play off Arlene. I mean, she would turn to her and do the moves. And not to forget, we grew up Motown and dancers on local Detroit TV shows. We knew movement. This was not Brian science, rather quite organic, actually. But they did do a lot of the frontline moves. Now, writing To Love Somebody, that one, her favorite tune.
That's by the
And
Bee Gees, correct?
by the Bee Gees. She was always looking for love. And it really was a sign of the times. Her fans were also looking for love, to be frank. And you know, it's funny what they said about her being nutty and fun off stage, because she was. I mean, she was like reliving, having married so young, she was reliving a fun life. Right out of high school, she got married. Think about that. So that was very true. She got real nutty and fun off stage, you know? Now, regarding the writing original songs, we were on the road. The time to write was scarce. However, the seeds were planted. And to add in another angle, Pat O'Day, during this amazing summer, had recognized that the vision of ABC and Mercury did not match up to what the Pleasure Seekers were presenting live in terms of a heavier song, and importantly, what the fans were responding to, and not the least bit gender-based and not TNA in presentation. He understood that not only was the vision wrong, but that the label's male suits would make more money in continuing to use staff writers. That was old school label thinking at that time. This would surely affect the band not being able to record their own originals and also make royalties.
Well, everything you're saying is so important, and I want to add one aspect to it. Pat O'Day really understood rock and roll music and who was talented and who was not, and where, again, using the word cultural shifts, were happening. And
Yes.
heavier was the mood. And we were dealing with conflict and war. I mean, this was not a time for an all-female girl band, as to use your words, to be singing in a Donna Reed costume and, oh, please love me tomorrow. So it is interesting, Arlene, being a little bit older, is still kind of in that older mindset of, oh, please, somebody to love me, right? It is different. And she didn't get to experience that. She's married to your manager, Leo Fenn, from the
Yeah.
moment, whereas all of you, at the same moment she was getting married, are on the road and having all of these experiences. And so we are at the end of this 3-month tour. So much has happened for the Pleasure Seekers, but we're going to continue for the rest of the season this very important support and push by Pat O'Day. Because he is so gung-ho, for lack of a better word, a way of, he's just so into you guys for the Pleasure Seekers, because he sees you as a bona fide, brilliant, talented rock and roll band. And so he begins to have talks with Leo. Yes?
Oh my God, yes, in spades, I will say. Pat O'Day had already seen us live for 3 months, and he well knew what we were capable of, the heavier music that we were doing, the fan response, a thriving fan club, and the excitement of the band with the fans. O'Day also felt that our pop single, even though it was a turntable hit, did not represent what we could do in the music arena. He was already planning another return tour to the Pacific Northwest in December of 1968, in just a few months, leaving us with experienced advice and offering his help even at the end of this amazing tour. We were riveted by Pat O'Day's talks on our next important roles and moves for the Pleasure Seekers. We were well on our way to growing up, both as musicians and women. None of it comes easily, as growing pains are now a part of our band life too, on the road, at home, wherever. Our motivations have not changed as a result of this tour. We knew this future musical path was it for us. We felt we were on our way after this magical summer of love. The Pacific Northwest tour ended on such a huge high, Kristen. Oh my God. And we started our journey back to Detroit with gigs along the way. It was an incredible time and the start of many changes to come.
It's the time of the season when love runs high. In this time, give it to me easy. Let me try with pleasured hands to take you in the sun to promised lands to show you everyone. It's the time of the season for love. What's your name? Who's your daddy?
Who's your daddy? He rich.
Is he rich like me? Has he taken
any time? Any time to show.
To show you what you need to live.
Tell it to me slowly.
Tell you why
I really want to know. It's the time of the season for love.
What's your name?
What's your name?
Who's your daddy?
Who's your daddy?
He rich. Is he rich like me? Has he taken?
Has he taken
any time?
Any time to show?
To show you what you need to live.
Tell it to me slowly.
Tell you why
I really want to know. It's the time of the season for love.